Hi, I'm Daniel Alarcón, host of NPR's Spanish language podcast, Radio Ambulante. This week, a year after the earthquakes that devastated the country, Mexico is still dealing with the aftermath. Schools were especially damaged, and the government promised to rebuild them fast, but two journalists discover that the truth about that reconstruction is much more complicated.
From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. We're going to do something a little different this week. We're going to mark the one-year anniversary since the Caribbean was pounded by natural disasters, hurricanes, leaving millions without power for months, destruction of an already fragile infrastructure, and almost 3,000 people lost, dead, because of the storms and their after effects. And we're also going to take a look at what many call a political disaster that was the U.S. government's response, or lack of, to the plight of over 3 million U.S. citizens. We're going to do all of that through the reconstruction of a brief timetable of events over the last year using NPR news reports to tell the story of when the storm hit, its immediate aftermath, and the struggle that ensued and that the island is still going through. Now, to do that, I've asked NPR news editor Luis Clemens to join me this week. He was the main editor coordinating NPR's coverage for our news magazines and digital outlets. Luis, welcome to Alt Latino.
Thank you, Felix.
Okay, what are we going to hear?
So we're going to hear the sounds of the first few days after the storm could be described as chaos. We're talking about lines, people in lines at the airport in Miami, people at lines in the airports across the mainland, people trying to get out of Puerto Rico, but the airport was shut down. You had shortages of cash. You had inability of people to communicate by phone because only 100 of 1,600 cell towers across the island were still functioning. You had shortages of gas, shortage of groceries. A lot of people spending a lot of time waiting.
Hurricane Maria's rampage through Puerto Rico left neighborhoods destroyed and the entire island without power. Shops, powered mostly by generators, are now reopening. Roads are being cleared, but thousands of people are homeless. NPR's Greg Allen visited a temporary shelter in a town that's been flooded.
The town of Cataño on Puerto Rico's northern coast is a low-lying community where residents don't have a lot of money. The water rose quickly here when Maria hit last Wednesday. Irma Rivera Aviles, like nearly 200 others, now is stuck in a shelter where conditions are getting worse daily. The governor needs to come here and take a look at our critical situation, she says. The bathrooms are flooded and aren't working. Sewage is spilling all over. The generator is broken and we're here in the dark. We desperately need water, power, and ice. Rivera is a Cataño City Council person who helped set up the shelter here. She evacuated before the storm because she has a house made of wood close to the water's edge in Cataño. After Maria passed, when she returned, what she found shocked her. The entire roof was blown off, she says. Everything got soaking wet. The beds, furniture, everything. The walls are caving in and water is still leaking in. Although there's food provided at the shelter, there is no running water. At night, she says, with no power, residents are left in the dark and are awakened sometimes by the sound of gunshots nearby. But for Rivera and others at the shelter, their biggest worry is health care. My husband is a kidney transplant survivor, Rivera says. He's diabetic and we don't have ice to store his insulin. She opens up a blue cooler where she's trying to keep her husband's insulin cold.
Aquí está la insulina de mi esposo.
Oh, yeah, that's all the medication that his insulin, and it's the water's all melted now.
We need ice.
Authorities in Puerto Rico say there are more than 10,000 people in shelters across the island because their homes were destroyed by Hurricane Maria. FEMA and relief groups are delivering food, water, and generators to the island. But in Cataño, they say so far, no outside help has arrived. Nearly a week after the storm, some areas here are still flooded. I found 77-year-old Maria Escalera calmly pushing her walker through water up to her shins.
La casa de arriba se fue todo, se le fue el techo.
She says she has enough food and water at home, but wanted to check on her nephew, whose house is in the flooded area. She's thankful that she and her husband, who is blind, are alive. Her biggest worry, she says, is that she lost her dentures in the storm. Outside the Cataño mini market, a line stretches around the building. Customers like Milena Quinones are thrilled because the word is out. Banks are back online, their debit cards are working, they can buy badly needed supplies.
Bread, cheese, ham, everything. Everything you need. We have water.
In San Juan, there are lots of lines now. Lines of cars at gas stations waiting for tank trucks to arrive and gas to begin flowing again. Outside banks, where people for the first time since the storm have some chance to withdraw cash. Along the sides of highways, where cars line up in places motorists have found good cell phone signals. The government here reports some signs of progress. Water is slowly coming back in some areas. One of the most hopeful signs, Puerto Rico's power authority says it's restored electricity to two big hospitals in the San Juan area. And power is back on in part of Mayagüez, a city on the island's west side, far from the center of Maria's destruction. Greg Allen, NPR News, San Juan, Puerto Rico.
The sensation that permeated the island in the hours and days and first few weeks after the storm hit is one of waiting for a response, waiting to leave, waiting to arrive, waiting to communicate. A few weeks into that process, we have a sense of just how desperately bad things are on the island. And we can turn to a report by John Burnett, who visited the island and one of the hospitals, and describes the conditions.
Every day across this Caribbean island with its shattered power grid, hospitals wage a life and death battle to keep their patients from getting sicker in the tropical heat. At the Pavia Arecibo Hospital, about an hour west of San Juan, administrator Jose Luis Rodriguez wipes sweat from his worried brow.
We don't have air conditioning. We can handle maybe a week, but this is already 2 weeks almost.
The government calls them indirect deaths, those who died after the violent storm. Heart attack victims, people on kidney dialysis machines that failed, people who fell off damaged roofs, and people killed in auto accidents on highways made more treacherous from Maria's destruction. The official death toll is 34, but because of reports like this from local hospital officials, the number is expected to rise.
So far after the storm, we have had 49 dead bodies.
The fourth floor of the hospital has been taken over by stocky Midwesterners in khaki pants, black boots, and t-shirts that say DMAT for Disaster Medical Assistance Team. It's a sort of National Guard for medical people that falls under the Department of Health and Human Services. Chief Medical Officer of this DMAT is Dr. Melissa Stein. She's normally an urgent care physician at Mercy Hospital in St. Louis, currently deployed to Arecibo.
And so in telling team members coming here, we tell them it's going to be an extremely austere environment.
That is, no power, no air conditioning, no local water, no local food, no internet, and very limited communication. Each deployment has its challenges. Here in Arecibo, it was the sweltering sixth-floor cardiac unit.
The temperatures up there were as high as 108 degrees, even higher. This was a huge stress on the patients who were quite sick. So we have ended up moving them here to these tents where the hospital staff is caring for them.
That's Jim Fair, one of the DMAT docs. Lying in the cooling tent is a 77-year-old retired factory worker named Georgina Gonzalez. She may have ended up as an indirect victim of the storm had she not been brought here.
Mucho calor, mucho calor. Se ahoga, uno se ahoga.
It was hot, very hot. I was suffocating. When they transferred me here on Sunday, they rescued me from the dragon's mouth.
Me sacaron de la boca del dragón.
Back on the fourth floor, a distraught woman appears with a shocking story. The hospital, an hour away in the city of Aguadilla, she says, has shut down, kicked out its patients, and it smells like decomposing bodies. Team Commander George Thorpe springs into action.
We'll get a strike team out there right away.
Within an hour, the strike team is racing down the highway, past utility poles snapped like pencils and the fallen arches of a McDonald's. The team roars up to the Good Samaritan Hospital of Aguadilla. Two heavily armed federal agents enter first, then comes the DMAT, expecting the worst. They walk down a corridor past bewildered nurses and are ushered into a quiet, orderly office. Nervous laughter all around. Dr. Melissa Stein speaks first.
I am the chief medical officer for a National Disaster Medical Assistance Team. And we had been told that you needed significant help. I can tell by pulling up, at least the story we were given, it was somewhat exaggerated.
The hospital administrator, Marilyn Morales, listens politely and responds.
Our ER department, you know, is in bad conditions in terms of the temperature. Yes. If you can install something next to the ER, that would be excellent with some physicians.
As it turns out, both hospitals are in the same boat. There's no air conditioning, the emergency generators need maintenance, and the patients and staff are hot. After a tour, Stein promises to request some federal help, and the team files back out onto the sidewalk.
All right, saddle back up, get your packs.
With a big smile, she adds,
this is not the hospital of the Walking Dead, which is what had been described.
And that is a good example of what happens after a traumatic weather event when there's no communication, rumors fly, and people worry about their hospitals. John Burnett, NPR News, Arecibo, Puerto Rico.
You're listening to Alt Latino. This is Felix Contreras, and we're looking at Puerto Rico 1 year later. We're reconstructing the timeline of NPR News coverage, and I'm talking to NPR News editor Luis Clements, who coordinated that. And along those lines, tell us a little bit about the behind-the-scenes stuff. What is it like getting people into a disaster area when everybody else is trying to leave?
You know, it's the craziest sensation. You ask yourself, what are we doing sending people in when there are so many people going out? But look, this is what we do. This is our obligation to provide information. And it was very hard. We looked at all sorts of options, private planes. I looked at trying to put people on a catamaran from another Caribbean island. Finally, we were able to hitch rides with some of the aid flights that were going in, some of the commercial airliners that were going in to transport aid workers. Things are happening. It's a big news story. People are hurting, and we're not there, and this is part of the USA. This is the sort of thing you would expect if you were trying to get into, I don't know, some natural disaster in some far-flung country with little infrastructure. We're talking about trying to transport our people to another city in the U.S., of trying to get people from Miami, Orlando, New York, elsewhere to San Juan.
You know, one of the things that stands out very early on is the lack of response from the office of the president here in the United States. And there were people back on the island who were very, very vocal about that, including the mayor of San Juan.
That's right. The mayor of San Juan quickly earned the enmity of the president of the United States with her very harsh criticism of the federal government's response to the crisis. I would say, though, it is important to have a couple things in context. Number one, this was the third hurricane to hit the United States in less than 2 months. Harvey had hit Texas. Irma had hit Florida. Irma had hit Puerto Rico. Irma had hit Virgin Islands.
Correct.
And you have much of the material that was in storage on the island for just this kind of hurricane was quickly shipped out to other locations. So Maria comes along, and clearly FEMA didn't have the resources, clearly didn't have the staffing to adequately deal with three major hurricanes in rapid succession, including one of them on an island. You add into that really the less than satisfactory response from Puerto Rico's government itself. When we're talking about electricity, they didn't activate or initiate quickly mutual aid agreements that would have allowed for very inexpensive resources and linemen from other states to come into Puerto Rico and help out. They botched contracts. It was moving slower than molasses. You mentioned a political failure. The way I look at it is an institutional failure. You had a complete failure of the institutions that in this situation should have been serving Puerto Ricans on the island at a much higher level, at a much more efficient level. And you saw failure at the level of the Commonwealth government. You saw failure at the municipal level. You saw failures at the level of the federal government. And you just saw people struggling everywhere. It was this crazy situation where there was aid coming in, where there were goods coming into the port, and things like the gas shortage would mean that you just could not transport that stuff to where it was needed. I mean, this was really, you talk about the storm itself and the hurricane itself, but the island was buffeted by all these institutional failures in terms of the response that just, it made it this really long-lasting, slow-moving train wreck that, you know, took months to begin to right itself and move in the right direction.
In Puerto Rico's capital, San Juan, Mayor Carmen Yulín Cruz says it's hard for her to process the neighborhoods that have been flooded and the number of homes destroyed by Hurricane Maria. But at a news conference today, she said Puerto Ricans are resilient.
Maria will not defeat us, and as soon as our crews can safely hit the streets, we'll start to rebuild. I guarantee you, we're a country filled with energy and hope. The laws will not stop us.
The last hurricane to cross the entire island, Georges, in 1998, caused some $2 billion in damages. Maria is likely to far exceed that, and it comes as the U.S. territory is struggling to manage a crippling debt brought on by years of economic recession. Edwin Melendez, the director of the Center for Puerto Rican Studies at Hunter College, says the hurricane hits hard two sectors of Puerto Rico's economy that were beginning to show signs of growth: agriculture and tourism.
With the upcoming winter, we need to see what damage is causing the infrastructure, how bad the hotels are hit, and kind of occupancy they're going to experience. And then what kind of damage has been done to the crop.
Even before Maria hit, Puerto Rico's governor, Ricardo Rosello, predicted that the Category 4 hurricane would lead to, quote, a total collapse of the energy system. This afternoon, Puerto Rico's emergency management director said there are reports Maria knocked out critical high-voltage lines, leaving virtually the entire island without power. Former Puerto Rican governor Luis Fortuño says fixing the island's aging electrical grid will be one of the government's toughest jobs.
The power authority needs tremendous infusion of money, and those funds have not been available. So I believe that the main issue here will be no power for weeks in many parts of the island.
Puerto Rico's Power Authority is one of many public agencies unable to pay its bills. A financial oversight board appointed by the U.S. Congress is now in charge of all of the island's finances. The board is considering a proposal to privatize the island's power authority, essentially selling it to the highest bidder. John Mudd, an attorney in Puerto Rico who's been following the island's financial troubles, says this disaster gives that proposal a big push.
It's going to be easier politically to do so, because then you can tell the government, hey guys, you don't have the money to do it, forget about it.
Given its financial problems, Puerto Rico's recovery will depend heavily on help from FEMA and Congress. Governor Rosello has praised President Trump and FEMA Director Brock Long for their quick response and pledges of support for the U.S. territory. Edwin Melendez of Hunter College says it will be weeks before the human toll and the costs of the storm become clear. But there may be a silver lining. He says rebuilding will create jobs on the island and a short-term economic boost.
This is not the kind of injection in the economy, the stimulus that you like to see, but it's the stimulus that we're going to have over the next few months.
Former Governor Fortuño saw something like that in 2011 when Hurricane Irene, a Category 1 storm, hit the island. The recovery process sparked a small economic rebound at a time when it was badly needed. Greg Allen, NPR News.
You're listening to Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. We're talking about Puerto Rico 1 year later. I'm talking with NPR editor Luis Clemens. Let's move on to talk a little bit about the infrastructure and how it was in a bad state to begin with, and then the storm came and just basically wiped it all out.
So bad in some cases, lousy in others. Remember, Puerto Rico going into the storm had a huge and unmanageable debt. $9 billion of that debt was associated with Puerto Rico's electric utility, PREPA. It was an antiquated grid beforehand. It was highly vulnerable to exactly this kind of storm. It took practically 11 months for all power to be restored to all households that lost it during the storm. I mean, that is a stunning, stunning delay or a stunning fact to accept, that people in the United States of America had to go, in many cases, for months without power. It's that weakness in that electric infrastructure that is partly responsible for all those deaths that followed the initial storm. You had many people who were unable to either reach hospitals or who were unable to get their regular medical treatment or unable to consume the medication that they needed. It was just this combination that, when you think about it, it's shocking. It's shocking to think how many things could go wrong all at once and how much of that is directly traceable to the flaws in infrastructure.
Hurricane Maria wiped out Puerto Rico's electrical grid in September, and as we've been reporting, getting the lights back on has been a slow and uneven process. On the Puerto Rican island of Vieques, residents face the prospect of 6 more months without reliable electricity. NPR's Merritt Kennedy recently traveled there to see how people are getting by.
La Nasa is the place to be on a Sunday night in Vieques. Couples sway on the dance floor, a bartender pulls beers out of a cooler. The bar is now a rickety patio next to a giant pile of debris. This place was reduced to rubble by the hurricane and washed into the sea.
What's a mess? What's a big mess?
That's Jose Silva, the owner, standing on the sand. He says that after the hurricane, he scavenged wood to reconstruct the small bar and reopened within a week.
You know, people, they were so stressed out, you know, they were so sad. They just want to come and cry in there, you know, trying to make people feel like, you know, you can do it.
The storm cut Vieques off from Puerto Rico's main grid. A generator-powered speaker blasts a new holiday song with a gift request. It goes, "I'm asking the three kings to bring a new generator that works." That message resonates here. Carlos Perez is the operator of the island's troubled main generator. On this morning, red lights flash on the control board. It took months to get it up and running at all. Now it's still riddled with problems. Perez works for Puerto Rico's electric utility. He says the generator is meant to be a backup when the connection to the main grid is down. Perez provides a litany of causes for this generator's problems, like difficulty obtaining spare parts and fuel and down power lines. Hernid Cruz Felix, the animated spokesman for the mayor, says there's a more basic truth here.
You can ask any resident of Vieques, and they will tell you that that generator doesn't work, that it's a piece of junk.
The electricity company, the Puerto Rican government, and the federal government all share responsibility for the plight of Vieques, he says. Vieques was used for decades as a training ground for the U.S. military, including bombing exercises, a fact that Felix believes obligates the federal government to provide more effective assistance. The island didn't have regular running water for nearly a month, he says, until generators were secured specifically to operate the pump. And cell service is also sparse. That makes it nearly impossible to run a business, says Gladys Aleman, the co-owner of an ecotourism company here.
I think it's just ludicrous that in this day and age, we don't have communications and we still don't have electricity.
The vulnerability of Vieques is starkest at the island's hospital. The main building of the hospital was damaged by the storm and now home to a dangerous amount of mold.
That is for a monitor, those monitors and...
There's a makeshift clinic in the hospital's parking lot. Dr. Jose Carrasquillo is giving us a tour of its military-style tents.
I consider this camping.
Carrasquillo makes do with what he has. To demonstrate how he sutures in the dimly lit tents, he pulls out a small flashlight and holds it between his teeth.
I have to bring a flashlight and hold it with my mouth. Improvise, because the patient needs it.
The doctor operates without equipment that would be standard in most hospitals, and transporting patients with more serious injuries isn't always possible.
If the weather is bad, no one gets out of here. That means I'm going to have to treat anything that comes here. That's a challenge.
The precariousness of the facility scares him. The doctor fears the tents won't last long against the elements. And it's only 6 months until hurricane season starts again. Merritt Kennedy, NPR News, Vieques, Puerto Rico.
And now we're going to turn to an interview I did earlier this year with Lin-Manuel Miranda about a song he wrote and produced that was used to help raise funds for disaster aid for the island. Now, many people were watching the slow response and felt compelled to help in any way that they could, and Lin-Manuel Miranda did what he does best.
So I got to ask you, at what point while you were watching the coverage of the hurricane, did you start thinking about the song, Maria, from West Side Story?
Well, listen, I've got a musical theater brain. It's, some people have different kinds of brains, math and science, that's what I got. And, you know, I was very aware, even as it was happening, that this was the worst hurricane to hit Puerto Rico in 100 years. The eye just sat on the island for a long time. It's a Category 5 hurricane, and I knew that Maria would forever have a different connotation on the island as a result of that. And that's my favorite song from West Side Story. So I began thinking about that song and the lyrics and a way to flip it into something positive. And, you know, if I could write a song that could raise money for the island, maybe I could also flip this lyric. So really the first call I made before I even started writing the song was to the Bernstein Estate and to Stephen Sondheim asking for permission to quote that lyric. The second idea that happened almost at the same time was that there was, you know, for Puerto Ricans who live all over the world, who have a connection and family on the island, there was a terrible silence of several days where we were just waiting for word. And my Twitter feed, my Facebook feed was just filled with family members listing the names of towns where their families were living and from. My grandmother's in Lares, my uncle is in Hatillo, my uncle is in Vega Alta. Has anyone seen them? Has anyone heard from them? And I thought, well, the only lyric that really unites us and that makes the most sense for a fundraising song is if I can somehow write a lyric that includes all 78 towns in Puerto Rico so that no one feels left out and no one's town feels forgotten.
It's and I love that idea because it's almost like a roll call, you know, and the beauty of the Spanish and even the indigenous Taino names, they are like a prayer. When you say them like that, I mean, calling out even to like ancestral energy. And to me, it has the same emotional punch as the end of that song, Plástico by Ruben Blades, where we're listing those towns again. I saw a parallel, and it's just as strong in your song.
Oh, well, thank you very much. You know, it's also the one of the stories, there have been a lot of heartbreaking stories coming out of Puerto Rico, but one of the ones that broke my heart was actually not the story, but the headline. The headline in the Times on Sunday was, for many towns in Puerto Rico feeling forgotten. And that broke my heart because we were already midway in production on the song, but if, you know, hopefully we raise a lot of money for a lot of aid and a lot of relief for the humanitarian crisis we're in, but also hopefully these towns never feel forgotten again.
You had a couple of musical genres to explore for the actual music track. It could have been old school salsa that Puerto Rico's known for, at least to my generation, the folk traditions of bomba and plena, but you went with the reggaeton feel. How did you decide on that?
I decided on that because Despacito has been as much in my head as it has yours and your family's and everybody else's, you know, and, you know, that was also very freeing in a way because the fact, I'm so proud of that song for being such a hit, first of all. I've been following Luis Fonsi's career since I was in college and he was singing salsa, so it's been just a joyful pride to see that song have the success it's had, but it also opens an avenue, right? Because there are a lot of people who don't speak Spanish who still love that song. And so it also gives you permission in a way, like I can write a song where the lyrics are the names of these towns. And if the beat is hot and the voices sound great, then we're okay and we're still off to the races.
You know, the song you made, Almost Like Praying, it feels like a catharsis, a well-needed catharsis. It's a chance for us all to take a deep breath and look for the spirit of our communities for strength and perseverance, and with an amazingly catchy tune, which you did again. How do you continue to do that, man?
This one's catchier than most, too. Like, I'm like, oh, now I get it. I get why the reggaeton is so pegajoso. But thank you for that. But I also, I hope it provides catharsis. It certainly provided catharsis for me to write it. I also hope the names of these towns will never be forgotten. And I hope that people have their catharsis. To quote the kids, they cry in the club, and then they get back to work. Because we have a lot of work to do.
Lin-Manuel Miranda, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Thank you.
We're back. You're listening to Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. You know, one of the things, Luis, that stands out is the resilience of the people in Puerto Rico that have suffered through so many different things over this past year. But there's a spirit. There's a spirit of survival. There's a spirit of we're going to get through this. And it's usually expressed through music, is what I found. And being a music show, we've featured a lot of different Puerto Rican musicians over the last 8 years. And every single Puerto Rican musician I've talked to in the last year has been affected in one way or another. But they're still playing music and they're still doing things. We've covered that on our air as well.
You know, and I want to point out, there was a novelty song about the constant hum of generators in Puerto Rico. Daniela Cheslow did a piece about that. And, you know, it's, I wouldn't call it art. I wouldn't call it the greatest pop song. But you know what? It captured a moment and a sensation of how incredibly important having a generator and keeping it fueled and keeping it operational became for so many people on the island. It was a way of saying, yes, this is our fate, but we can laugh at it. We can make fun of it. We can deal with it.
Generators are the new soundtrack of Puerto Rico's holiday season. They power homes, hospitals, stores.
And the sound, this is inspiration for the writing this song.
Singer Joseph Fonseca thought he was prepared for hurricane season. He owned a propane generator and rolled it out when Hurricane Irma hit in early September and knocked out his electricity.
When starting the propane generator, no working.
What sound did it make?
Big, big sound.
Not a good sound.
No, not a good sound, no.
There was no repairman who could fix the machine because a second hurricane, Maria, was already on its way. So Fonseca bought a new machine. Did it work?
Yes, very, very push button for him.
After Maria completely wiped out the island's electric grid, he depended on that generator and listened to the loud noise. And he wrote a song about it.
The chorus is, yo le voy a pedir a los reyes que me traigan la planta nueva, que cuando prenda ella no suene y que no haga.
It means, I will ask the three kings to bring me a new generator. And when I turn it on, it shouldn't make this noise. In Puerto Rico, January 6th is Three Kings Day, a religious festival celebrating the story of the three wise men with parades and presents. I watched Fonseca perform last week at a Christmas party in San Juan, the capital. He takes the stage while men in crisp shirts and women in elegant evening gowns sit at round tables. The first song, La Planta Nueva, the new generator. Fonseca has a generator dance where he pretends to pull a cord to start the machine. Couples hold hands and dance to the choppy beat. Outside, Melvin Muniz drinks a mojito.
This is our life right now in Puerto Rico.
He lives south of San Juan and he still doesn't have power.
But I hope that we have electricity before New Year.
Many people won't get power back anytime soon. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers estimates it will take until late February at the earliest to restore most of the grid, longer for remote towns. Fonseca says he hopes Puerto Ricans suffering through the slow recovery might hear his song and have some holiday joy. For NPR News, I'm Daniela Cheslow in San Juan.
On a more serious note, NPR correspondent Mandalit Del Barco did a piece about how the folkloric music called plena had a bit of a revival after Maria.
There are two quintessential Puerto Rican sounds that survived Hurricanes Irma and Maria. One is the tiny coqui frog. The other is the improvised Afro-Puerto Rican call and response tradition known as plena.
Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico!
Last Sunday, a group of musicians gathered in Luisa, a small town known for African-inspired folklore. The annual Calle Luisa Festival was canceled because of the hurricane, but that didn't let them stop them from parading through the streets with hand drums. Drumming and singing with them was Emmanuel Santana from the band Plena Libre.
It is very, very Puerto Rican. Every time a Puerto Rican hears the drums called panderos, you can have them come down in tears in a time like this, where there's no electricity to even hear music. You don't have no MP3s right now, so we're back to basics.
As they traveled on the sidewalk from bar to bar, they attracted followers who sang along. Leading them was Hector Matos, known as Tito Matos, a Grammy nominee and one of Puerto Rico's best-known pleneros. He drums and sings plenas about the love he has for the island.
Love Mother Earth, respect of nature, you know, environment. Trying to use the moment to also teach the young generation these hurricanes are coming faster, bigger, and stronger than ever, and that's because of us.
Matos is a member of the group Los Pleneros de la 21. He's recorded and toured with Eddie Palmieri, David Sanchez, and Ricky Martin. He also owns a restaurant in Loíza, in a wooden building that was demolished in the hurricane. Then it was vandalized.
I had to deal with the issues of the hurricane and also go back every day to try to salvage some stuff. But look at my face, we are happy. I mean, we are alive, all my family members are fine and well, and we can rebuild with or without Trump.
Matos says he's not impressed by President Trump's declarations that the hurricane relief is going well. Puerto Ricans continue to struggle without food, water, and electricity. He says he and his pleneros wanted to bring them a little joy with the music. Missy Adamus is a chef at Matos' restaurant. She says while they're on standby, trying to rebuild the restaurant, their homes, their lives, at least they still have their music. Music has brought to life what was dead on Luisa Street, she says. Plenas are known as sung newspapers, giving the latest updates on what people are feeling and the news of the day. The headline of this week's plenas was about the devastation of Hurricane Maria. Winding through the streets of Loíza, they sang about resilience. Emmanuel Santana translated.
Our plena, our song, our music is stronger, our community is stronger than Maria.
Mandalit del Barco, NPR News, Loíza, Puerto Rico.
And finally, a piece from NPR's Adrian Florido. Now, Adrian is part of NPR's Code Switch team, and he is now living and reporting from Puerto Rico on a full-time basis, a reflection of NPR's commitment to covering the island as it recovers over the long haul. His story is another fantastic look at the musical culture of Puerto Rico and how it infuses the spirit of everyone on the island.
Yeah, Puerto Rican bomba music has always... It's always been a way for people who dance to it to sort of forget the troubles in their lives. That was true for the island's African slaves who first started dancing bomba centuries ago. It's also been true after Hurricane Maria. So let me introduce you to Jomar Cruz. He teaches bomba. And after the hurricane, he organized a little workshop and asked people to write down how they were feeling. Here's Cruz.
Lo que más sobresalió fue, ¿verdad?, lo que es la angustia.
Cruz says that what stood out were words like anguish, sadness, desperation over having lost so much to the hurricane. In bomba music, there is a rhythm to express just those emotions. It's called yuba.
Los ancestros, nuestros esclavos, en la antigüedad utilizaban esto luego de venir de un día largo de trabajo.
Our ancestors, our slaves, danced to these rhythms after a long day of work, Cruz says, to shed their sadness. He demonstrates Yuba's basic step, left foot to the side while bringing his right fist to the chest, then his right foot to the side, left fist to his chest, and then a verse. I'm looking for a tree to give me shade, he sings, because this tree I've got doesn't shield me from the sun. At his workshop after the hurricane, Cruz says people felt such relief dancing to Yuba that they cried. Bomba and other traditional music helped people cope. Marcos Peñalosa Pica is a musician from Loíza, a coastal community of windswept beaches and palm trees, home to descendants of the island's slaves. It's cradle of black culture.
No había agua, no había luz, no hay televisión, no hay radio, no hay medios de comunicación, no hay teléfono, no hay nada.
We had no water, electricity, TV, radio, phone, nothing, Peñalosa says. But we had our drums and our hands and our feet, and that's all we've ever needed to dance bomba. In most drum dances, the dancer follows the drummer's lead. But bomba is different. The drummer is responding to the dancer's movements. The flick of a wrist, bouncing shoulders, gyrating hips. The dancer and the drummer are in conversation. Marcos Peñalosa Pica defines bomba simply as the expression of freedom.
Campo, yo vivo triste, cada día sufriendo más. Ay Dios, ¿qué será de mí? Si no bailo esta bomba, prefiero morir.
I'm living in sadness, he sings. Every day brings more suffering. Oh God, what'll become of me? If I couldn't dance bomba, I'd rather die. Here in Loíza, there is a cultural center that teaches bomba. Maricruz Rivera Clemente is its director, and she says that shortly after the hurricane, two women, the center's oldest participants, showed up to ask if the classes would go on.
Si ustedes vinieron hasta aquí y ustedes tuvieron pérdidas materiales en su residencia, en su casa, y están aquí, pues eso nos dice mucho.
They'd suffered so much damage to their homes, Rivera says, but they still came, and that said a lot. The hurricane ripped holes in the center's roof, but Rivera resumed classes the following week. Sure, when it rained, they got wet, but in those days when so many people were fleeing the island, Rivera saw bomba, culture, identity, that emotional connection, as among the few things that might convince people to stay.
Pero hemos estado en situaciones todavía más difíciles. Sí, nuestros abuelos, nuestra gente, por lo tanto.
Our ancestors survived much worse, Rivera says, she told people who considered leaving. We have tools, we have culture to get us through this. Come on, let's dance a little.
Es Borinquen, mi Borinquen, donde nací, me crié, boricua soy y seré. Es Borinquen.
About 10 miles from Loíza in the capital, San Juan, Alfredo Emerson has hosted a night of bomba and plena music most Mondays for the last 2 years. It's always been a popular gathering, but in the days after Maria, attendance surged, especially among young people.
Mucha gente se entera más a través de las redes sociales y de la gente. Mira, vamos para allá, que aquí no hay nada que hacer. Vamos para allá, olvídate de la calle, si no hay luz, vámonos.
They'd find out through social media, Emerson says, and they'd say, hey, there's nothing else to do, let's go there. And they liked it, and they're still coming. It's all over, this artist sings. Like the passing wind, you took everything from me, and my love has died. As they play, one young person after another steps up, bows to the lead drummer in a show of respect, and begins to dance.
Hey, this is Adrian Florido. Thanks for listening to Alt Latino. We want to let you know that NPR's Code Switch podcast is also covering the one-year anniversary of Maria. Look for Code Switch wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to Alt Latino. We are talking about Puerto Rico 1 year later. And now I want to take some time, Luis Clemens, to talk about Puerto Rico 1 year in the future and many years in the future. Mm. What do you see as a way forward for the island in terms of how we have reporters there now? We have a reporter living there, as a matter of fact. Talk to us a little bit about that. And what do you think lies in the future for the island, either in terms of recovery or politically?
So let's take the last bit, recovery. This is going to be years, right, before the island gets back to where it was before Hurricane Maria hit. We've got $19 billion from the Department of Housing and Urban Development that has been approved as community block development grants that will be going to Puerto Rico and will be used to help finance the recovery. To give you some perspective, the Puerto Rican government's annual budget is roughly $9 billion. So this is a lot of money vis-a-vis what is normally spent on the island. This is a fraction, and a small one at that, of what Puerto Rico's governor had requested Congress approve. So the big challenge moving forward is, how do we take this money that we are getting, and I don't think there's going to be more of it, and how do we make that stretch, and how do we make that work, and how do we determine that it should be spent, and how do we do so in a way that incorporates the views and the opinions and the demands and the needs of all Puerto Ricans, and doesn't just reflect the views of government policymakers. And in terms of what happens politically, well, you know, you'd have to be Walter Mercado to figure out what the next political development in Puerto Rico is. So my respect to Walter, I'll leave that part to him.
Okay, maybe we give him a call. Luis Clemens, National News Desk Editor for NPR News. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your expertise with us, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Felix. It's always good to chat.
And we're going to end with some music, a sunrise performance by the chorus of the University of Puerto Rico, as recorded by Adrian Florido. He says they were performing on the shores overlooking Yabucoa, where Hurricane Maria made landfall exactly 1 year ago. I'm Felix Contreras. This has been Alt Latino. Thank you for listening.
Cafetales, de caña, azúcar y piña, de guayaba y mampostiales de